Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Tuberculosis is a disease with a complicated history in Alaska. For years, the state has had some of the highest rates of infection in the country. But care for people with tuberculosis has a history of discrimination and mistreatment. Treatments have changed, though, and health workers say cases are especially high right now in Alaska for a number of reasons. With World Tuberculosis Day coming up on March 24th, they say it's time to raise awareness and dispel myths about the disease. Today, we're going to look at the history of tuberculosis in Alaska and where we are today. We'll talk about why cases rates are so high right now and how to prevent, detect, and treat cases of tuberculosis. Later in the show, we'll also talk about opportunities for testing in the coming weeks. To help me explore this topic today, I'm joined by Nurse Lee Boone. She is a public nurse and tuberculosis case manager with the Anchorage Health Department. I'm also joined by Dr. Bruce Chandler. Dr. Chandler, Bruce, currently works in the Alaska Department of Health and has a long history of medical work in Alaska, including with the Anchorage Health Department. You can also be part of this conversation. If you have a question or a comment, please call us toll-free. The number statewide is 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. You can also email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. Bruce, welcome back to Line One. You've been a guest before. I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. I've been here quite a while. I'm an ancient pediatrician and did the first half of my medical career solely in pediatrics, and then had a midlife crisis at about age 40 and went to study public health in Bethesda. And then since then, starting in the early, in 1992, I've been working in it part-time with the in public health and part-time as a pediatrician at Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center.
Oh, good. Thank you for your service in Alaska.
My career got disrupted by COVID, and for the last 2 years was working at the health department full-time. And then for the last 2 years now, I'm working with the TB program. I worked extensively with Lee Boone and her. They have an outstanding team of public health nurses and DOT aides do tremendous work dealing with TB in Anchorage, as do people all over the state.
Absolutely. Lee, welcome to Line One. You've also been a guest before. It's been a few years. Lee, if you could share with the listeners who you are and what your job is and a little bit about yourself.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. This is wonderful. I love being able to inform the community about what the Anchorage Health Department does. And as Bruce knows, we've been partners in crime for quite some time. I'm a public health nurse for the Anchorage Health Department, and my main role there is a TB case manager for going on 16 years, soon to be 17.
That's great. That's great. So you've seen a lot of changes over that time, I presume.
Right. And we, the team that you referred to, that Bruce referred to, is made up of quite a few TB case managers. We see TB clients on a daily basis, and from start to finish, from detection all the way through the complete treatment of tuberculosis.
Okay. Well, there is a lot of topics we can cover with tuberculosis, but I want to start with the very basic. And Bruce, we'll start with you. if you could tell our listeners, you know, what, just the basics, what is tuberculosis?
So tuberculosis is an infection caused by a bacterium called Mycobacterium tuberculosis. And it's been around for thousands of years. It's very interesting. Unlike some other bacteria, it can be very difficult to for our immune system to handle. So where the immune system can wipe out other infections, with TB, it often, or if we have a good immune system, we can wall it off and go about our lives and never get sick with TB disease. But there still are live dormant bacteria that's in our bodies that if something breaks down our immune protection, then the bacteria can continue to multiply, and then we get sick with a TB disease. Most commonly, it's in the lungs, and the more bacteria, the more bacteria there are multiplying in our lungs, so the more we can infect other people. Okay. We transmit TB by microscopic respiratory droplets that we exhale. The sicker we are, the more infectious droplets we may release into the air. And these droplets are so small, they can float in the air for hours after we've exhaled them. So anyone around us who happens to inhale those bacteria can become infected. The more time a person spends in a close indoor space with a person with infectious TB, the greater the likelihood of becoming infected.
Okay, thank you. Lee, anything to add to the basics of tuberculosis?
Right, and as Bruce knows, I think it's really important to know that, and I tell people this all the time, that basically it's a bacteria. It's spread through the air, like Bruce was saying, and we can end up with TB infection, and it can lay dormant in the body. The person that has TB infection will have no signs or symptoms. They may not know it unless they're tested. If that bacteria, about 1 in 10, if that bacteria is in their body over the course of their lifetime, it can wake up and become disease. Same bacteria, but now it's active in the body and typically in the lungs. But we've had cases of children that had TB meningitis. We've had cases of scrofula in the neck, extrapulmonary TB. So TB is a devastating disease, and it can go to all parts of the body. The good news is that it's preventable, and it's also curable. Unfortunately, like Bruce was saying, that cure, if it does become disease, is typically a minimum of 6 months to even a year. And that's not even taking into account multi-drug-resistant TB. So when somebody has symptoms, those symptoms might appear if they have the infection and it wakes up, then you may have a cough that doesn't go away, unintended weight loss, fever or fatigue, and the number one is coughing up blood. And so when somebody has those symptoms, there's testing for that. And if we have people at the health department, we take pride in the fact that we probably have the only two induction booths, freestanding induction booths, in the city of Anchorage, if not the state. And so when somebody has symptoms, quite often providers throughout the municipality will send us those clients, and we'll have them cough and spit into a container. That's called a sputa induction. It's observed and induced. We send it to the state lab, and lo and behold, if it grows out TB, then there is treatment. But that treatment is a minimum of 6 months to a year. At the Anchorage Health Department, we probably see many, many more people that have TB infection, and that's the good news. They have found it in time, and it's preventable, and so it doesn't ever go to TB disease. So we offer those medicines at no cost, and people can simply nowadays get a simple blood test to see if they have the infection. If that infection, if the blood test comes back positive, it's an IGRA test, and if that comes back positive, We'd send them for a chest x-ray to rule out active disease. If there's no disease in the lungs, like Bruce was saying, then we can go ahead and offer them the preventative medicine. And that can be as easy as coming in once a week for 12 weeks, 12 to 16 weeks, and you've killed that infection.
Okay, so we touched on a lot of subjects there. We're going to break those down a little bit so that we can explain it to our listeners. Let's start with the basics of exposure versus latent infection, which is what you're describing as the person has tuberculosis bacteria, but they're not actively infected. Okay, so the difference between infection and disease. Okay, so we'll go through that. So I guess Lee, the exposure, what are the chances for someone who is otherwise healthy, let's use that as a baseline, of getting exposed, what's the chance of them getting the illness?
So Bruce can speak more to that in terms of what the statistics are, but typically what our experience has been is that when we have somebody with active tuberculosis, the nursing staff there at the Anchorage Health Department and throughout the state, itinerant nurses do the same thing. We do what we call a contact investigation. And so we typically find that if you've been around somebody, usually in the household, for greater than 8 hours, that exposure, and depending on the recipient, if they're immunocompromised, if they're taking biologics that lower their immune system, if they're very, very young, very, very old, if they already have issues like cancer, or if they're positive for HIV, that immune system is lowered, and so they basically can end up with that infection, and the chances of it developing into disease are increased if you have those risk factors.
Okay, excellent. And Bruce, can you expound a little bit upon the difference between a latent infection and an active infection?
I might just comment a little about infection. Our risk of acquiring TB from an infectious person, it all depends on how many bugs are floating in the air and how long we spend in that airspace and the chance we might happen to inhale them. So if we're just walking through a grocery store and there happened to be a person with TB in a large volume of air, the risk is almost zero. But if we're hunkered down in a small household with a person with infectious disease, with infectious TB for days on end, then it's much more likely we're going to inhale the bacteria and become infected.
Okay.
So a lot of it depends on the circumstances, how infectious the patient is, and in what airspace environment we're associating with them. So if we inhale the bacteria and it gets down into the alveoli, the smallest airspaces, then we become infected, usually in a period of about 8 weeks, we'll develop a positive tuberculin skin test or a IGRA test that shows our immune system has detected that infection. But otherwise, we're absolutely fine. We have a normal x-ray. We have no cough, no other TB symptoms. And the only way we could tell a person is infected is by doing one of these tests.
Okay.
And most of us, for about 90% of us, that's the end of the story. If our immune system doesn't let us down, we continue on and live out our lives without ever getting sick with active TB.
Okay.
A small percentage, 5 to 10%, where the immune system can't contain it, and then we start to get sick. The bacteria begin to multiply, and the more disease there is, the more likely we are to have the symptoms Lee mentioned. The hallmark of pulmonary TB is a prolonged productive cough. We may be coughing up blood, have fevers and chills, night sweats, losing weight. And the the more advanced the disease, the more symptoms we have.
Okay.
And then and we become more infectious to others around us.
Okay. So in a latent infection where, okay, we've been exposed, I've been infected, I have the bacteria in my body, but it's not causing any symptoms. Am I contagious to other people at that time?
No, absolutely not. We no risk of transmitting TB if you just have TB infection. It's when you get sick, and that's when you can become infectious to others.
And so let's say that I get a test and we find out that I have latent bacteria. I mean, do I require treatment for that? Lee, I'll have you take this one.
Right. And that's the majority of what we see at the Anchorage Health Department when we have somebody with active TB, or if we have somebody that's coming in the healthcare field and maybe they're being tested for whatever reason, because their job requires it or because they've immigrated to this country and have been referred to the health department. Lo and behold, we find out that they do have that bacteria in their blood. They do have the infection, and they have the potential for it waking up and becoming disease at some point during their life. We've ruled out TB, active TB in that client. That's when the preventative medicine comes in, and that's the majority of the clients that we see at the health department. And that can be, that's a wonderful thing because it is preventable if we know we have it. If you come in to the health department, the Anchorage Health Department, and you get tested for it, and you get either the skin test, the tuberculin skin test, we now call it a TST, what we put under the skin is the PPD, purified protein derivative, but that's a good test as well. And so if that test comes back positive, and we've ruled out active TB with a chest x-ray and symptom screen and a full assessment with our nurses down there or by a provider in the community, then that's when the preventative medicine comes in. And so that can be as simple as 12 weeks, or it used to be a pill a day for 9 months. And so we have lots of different options depending on what medications you're on, what the situation is. But the nice thing is that it is preventable, and a provider like Bruce would write for that medicine, or someone in the community would write for it, and we get you in and get you the preventative medicine to kill that infection. If you come in and you test and that test is negative, then we stop right there. We don't need to go further if you're asymptomatic, don't have any symptoms, you're coming in for a routine test and the test is negative. If you're in the healthcare field, we suggest, it's recommended, a test once every year. Some folks that run assisted living homes, if you're a foster parent, if you're volunteering at a hospital, if you're a student nurse or any of those, or a CNA, all of those folks would come in for testing, and depending on what that test says, would be offered the preventative medicine if they have infection. And if not, then we would recommend that they come back annually if their job requires it. The state has even taken a step to say that for healthcare workers, unless there's a known exposure, and this is fairly new, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but they don't necessarily require testing.
Okay, that's interesting, because I remember getting tested, you know, every year all through school, through residency, through my medical training, but since getting out, really, I don't think I can remember the last test that I've had, and that's because the guidelines seem to have changed a little bit.
Correct.
Okay. Now, Bruce,
I'll just comment that we feel very strongly that if a person has TB infection, it's in their best interest to take this 3 or 4 month treatment for their TB infection, which reduces their risk of ever getting sick with active disease by about 90%. There's no legal requirement that people take their medicines for TB infection or TB disease. If a person with TB disease doesn't want to be treated, we may have to use legal means to try to isolate the person so they don't infect other people. But it's a lot of Lee's work is selling treatment for TB infection and TB disease and supporting people through their course of treatment to try to prevent them from ever getting sick with active disease. Or if a person has active disease, getting them non-infectious and cured of their disease in as short a period of time as possible.
Yes, absolutely. And we're gonna talk about active disease and treatment and some of the issues there here after our quick break. Just before we go into the break, though, from my own knowledge, if someone has a latent infection, let's say they test positive, you find out they have latent TB, they're treated for that. Will their test change after that? Do they now have negative tests, or will they always test positive?
Well, the providers, the manufacturers of those tests would like to say eventually we'll be able to measure that, but I just don't think we're at that point. So at the Anchorage Health Department, we really, by the guidance of the state and providers like Bruce, would not recommend further testing. They may come in, for example, for a TB clearance card through the health department or through their provider, and that may be as simple as a symptom screen. Now, that's not to say that somebody that takes the treatment for preventative medicine for TB infection or TB disease, that it may not reoccur. We often have that. And at some point, we'll talk about how we ensure by building trust and what we call DOT, direct observed therapy, we make sure that those with active TB complete their treatment.
Okay. Thanks for that. We're going to take a quick short break here. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on tuberculosis with Dr. Bruce Chandler and Nurse Lee Boone.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
The South Central Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will develop proposals to change federal subsistence hunting and trapping regulations and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting March 15th and 16th in Anchorage. More information at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Nurse Lee Boone and Anchorage from the Anchorage Health Department and Dr. Bruce Chandler with the Alaska Department of Health as we discuss the high rates of tuberculosis in Alaska and how to bring those numbers down. If you have a question or a comment, call us statewide, 888-353-5752. 888-353-5752 in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Now, Bruce and Lee, tuberculosis has a long, long history, especially in Alaska, and I do want to talk about that. But before we get into that, I want to address active TB disease and the treatment for that. And Lee, you mentioned something that piqued my interest is something called direct observed therapy.
Correct.
And I want to get into that because that's real tricky, I presume. So Bruce, let's have you start by discussing the treatment and the importance of treatment in active TB infection.
So treatment of active disease is the number one priority for controlling TB. And it's not an easy, simple treatment. TB is a very interesting bug as it divides when we have active disease and we have millions of bacteria in our body that are actively replicating. Like with many other organisms, it can develop mutations. And it can develop mutations that make it resistant to one of the drugs we use for one of or I guess, make it resistant to one of the drugs we're using to treat their disease. The more bugs, the more likely there are already resistant bugs in our system even before we start treatment.
Okay.
So we can't treat TB disease with one drug. And unlike with other infections where one shot of penicillin or a Z-Pak may cure our disease, it takes multiple drugs because of the worry about drug resistance for usually 6 months or longer. And it's very important that people take all of the multiple drugs each day together rather than picking and choosing one or more of the drugs because we want them cured and we want them not to end up with relapse with a drug-resistant organism.
True, which then they could spread to somebody else, and it's a cascade of drug-resistant disease out there. So I understand.
Exactly.
Treatment is incredibly important. Especially maybe in Anchorage, it's easier. Maybe it's not. In rural Alaska, I imagine there's other issues. But Lee, how do you convince people that, one, they need to take the treatment? And what do you do if they don't want to do it?
Well, it is, like Bruce was saying, it's a disease that's been around for years. And it's a lot of medication on a daily basis. And so we're really, really fortunate there at the Anchorage Health Department that we have currently 5 public health nurses that concentrate on TB disease and also the preventative TB infection. But we also have what we call family service aides and DOT aides. That's direct observed therapy, where they go out and can meet the individual in their home, at their business, once they're no longer infectious, or have them come in to see us. And we watch every dose Monday through Friday, which is the CDC guideline, to make sure that they're taking their medicine. We often have people say, you don't trust me? Do you not think I can take them on my own? Well, it's a very, very long course of treatment. And the medicines don't make you feel better. And so during that initial phase of the first 2 months, it's just essential that we start by building trust with individuals, especially if it's in the congregate setting where somebody's maybe in the homeless population and this is the last thing that they're interested in, they're concerned about, have other issues, and now we're insisting that they take medicine. So the CDC years ago started with incentives and enablers. An enabler might be that we house people temporarily while they're still infectious. Now, the health department in the state doesn't have a hotel where we can put them, but we have to look at the home and see if we can remove them from those shelters, for example, and keep them kind of isolated or self-isolated, maybe in their home for while they're still considered infectious. And so it starts by education, by trust. And so those enablers, like maybe a bus pass to come in, maybe it's food, maybe it's housing, whatever that might be to enable them to get to us. The medications at no cost is another enabler. And then there's incentives. So let's say we have an individual that has a lot of psychosocial issues. Maybe they have drug abuse, alcoholism, homelessness, or they simply don't really believe that culturally that this medicine is something that they must take. And so we count on the nurses to build that trust, to let them know that we're going to be there for them and that we're going to see them through the course of treatment. And so we use incentives like a gift card. Come on in. It may be that come on in and you're going to get to meet people that care about you. You can sit and visit with us for a while. We've even used chocolate milkshakes for some individuals. Mm-hmm. Just whatever it takes to say we're going to be here for you. We're going to make it easy for you. But it starts with trust and education. that you're going to feel better, that you will get through this, and we're here for you. And so, and that really, really helps. And we've got excellent nurses at this, excellent family service aides that start with building trust. I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. I'm going to knock on your door and be here on time. I'm going to make it easy for you. You don't have to come to us. We'll come to you. Those types of things. And then just being very supportive and caring is where it starts.
Absolutely. Okay, we have a couple calls coming in, and if you're waiting on the line, I will get to you here. We're going to start our first caller here. I can't see the name, Chris, but it's line six. Lauren, welcome to line one.
Hello. Thank you for this program. I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Was and is it as current with the Native population? Have they been more affected by PV historically and currently? And then I'd like to know also, what makes it so high in Alaska? Is it because we started out with a high amount of PV in the population to begin with, or not?
Lauren, those are two really, really great questions. So they're going to be a little involved here. I'll have you take the answer off the air, but we're going to get to each of those now. Bruce, has the Native population been historically higher infections, historically and currently, more impacted?
The Alaska Native population has had probably two centuries of dealing with tuberculosis. We really devastated in Western and Northern Alaska for about 150 years, starting with the arrival with the non-Native settlers and fishers and hunters and traders that came in the late 1700s. Many of those people came from areas of the world where there were high rates of TB and introduced it into that population. For the Alaska Native population, we're often living in very close, crowded housing and just ideal conditions for spreading TB. Before 1950, we had no medicines available to treat TB. And until 1950, TB was the leading infectious cause of death in the Alaska Native population. Just had astronomical rates of TB in the Native population in Western and Northern Alaska. And in the 1950s, surveys were done and using tuberculin skin tests and found in some areas 90% of the children had a positive tuberculin skin test indicating they were infected with TB. And that's one of the factors why TB remains prevalent in Alaska Native populations in Western and Northern Alaska. Many people have longstanding TB infection, and we know that some of those people over time, their immune system can't control the TB infection and that people get sick. And then they may become infectious to people around them in their home community. So that certainly is a factor. Even now, 70 years later, we've had effective treatments for 70 years, but there is a large population of people with TB infection that not everyone has been treated for their TB infection, and a few people break down each year and develop active disease and continue to spread it.
Yeah, yeah.
In Alaska, unlike the rest of the country where most of the cases are in people who've moved to the United States from other countries, in Alaska, the majority of our cases are homegrown, acquired locally.
Okay. Very interesting. So as our listeners may know, or I'm sure our guests do, the Alaska Beacon reported on data from the Alaska Department of Health showing that case numbers for 2022 were about two-thirds higher than previous years. I'm sure there's a lot of factors involved here. And Alaska historically has had some of the highest rates and death rates actually in the world, not just in the U.S. So, Lee, I guess this is part two of Lauren's question a little bit, but why are the rates so high in Alaska and why are they so high right now?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I would say an example would be, and I don't want to blame everything on the pandemic, but if you're in sleep mute, if you're out in Unalakleet, if you're out in an area where you can't just walk in, like if you're in Anchorage, you can go to a urgent care center. There are four major hospitals here. Access to that health may be limited. If you start to cough or notice a child with some of these symptoms, you've literally got to get on a plane or get on a snow machine and get to access to that health. And then we told people during, and think about it, Alaska is so large and we have all the different villages and it's very, very cold. What do people do when it's cold? We gather together. We have large potlucks. We go to the same churches, the same schools, and we have large extended families in some of these villages. And so, of course, if one person is infectious, highly infectious, the chances of it being spread to others is very, very easy. And to have access to health care means possibly getting on a plane to get to somewhere where you can actually get an x-ray, a test, sputa collection, and treatment. And so with the pandemic, we were telling people to stay in, and we're not just seeing this with the disease of tuberculosis, but others as well, heart disease, diabetes, where people were staying away from healthcare providers because of the fear of COVID. And so now, as people wake back up and they're coming in to be seen, lo and behold, that cough is more than just a cough. It may be tuberculosis. And so we are seeing some very, very high rates in those areas. And traditionally, we had a young, I'll just share a short story that we had a nursing student, and she came in, she was a native born, and the very first thing she said is, can I turn to my elders and translate this information about tuberculosis into Yupik or into the language in the communities? And she did so. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But that trust, because from years ago when families were separated, that you've got years of trying to build back that trust, and also the lack of access to health care has been impacted by COVID.
Sure, sure. So I have a bunch of calls coming in here, and some of them I think have to do with some vaccines. I want to get to some of these here before we run out of time. We're going to start here with Monica from Anchorage. Monica, welcome to Line 1.
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Absolutely, yeah. What question can we answer for you?
Well, my daughter was born in Argentina, and she got vaccinated when she was a baby with the BCG. So I wonder why we don't do that. And then also she's had, back to the United States, she's had problems ever since with the taking the tuberculosis test, like when she was young, going into school. It would come out positive, she'd have to get the chest x-ray. And so she's had several chest x-rays. And I wonder if there's any thing she could do to not have to get a chest x-ray in the future. She's like 34 now.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Bruce, tell us a little bit about this vaccine for TB, why we don't do it in the U.S., and the positive tests.
So many countries with high rates of TB, especially in developing countries with limited healthcare resources routinely vaccinate babies with BCG vaccine. BCG vaccine has shown benefit in reducing rates of very serious infections like TB meningitis and disseminated TB throughout the body in infants and young children. It doesn't prevent getting sick with the less serious forms of TB, but it does show benefit in limiting the risk for the very most serious forms of TB in infants and young children. When we get vaccinated with BCG vaccine, it's a using an attenuated strain of a Mycobacterium bovis. It can cause us to have a positive skin test reaction from the vaccine, which can make it difficult to tell if our skin test reaction is from the vaccine or from being infected with TB. So as Lee mentioned earlier, there's now what's called an interferon gamma release assay blood test that won't react if our immune system is sensitized to BCG only if we've been infected with TB. So for people who've had prior BCG vaccination, we strongly prefer to do the IGRA test because if it's positive, it means we're infected with TB, and if it's negative, it's likely the tuberculin skin test reaction is likely from our BCG vaccination in the past. And if we have a negative IGRA test, we're likely not infected and don't need to worry about getting treated. And we can be cleared for school and other activities. And
good. And that's a blood test.
On.
Yeah, that's a blood test now.
Yes, it's just a simple... simple blood tests. We, because of Bruce's influence, we've moved so much towards the BCG because what I tell people is it's a much more definitive test. That skin test can be placed, and depending on the person that's reading it, it's very subjective. Plus, if you're going into a population, for example, like those that are unhoused, and you place a skin test and then expect them to be there to have it, to come back to have it read, or to meet you to have it read in the right time period, that may not happen. This is a one-shot test. We draw a small amount of blood, and we can get those results back within about 4 to 7 days here in the municipality. Out in other areas, that blood, getting that blood back, it's another challenge for especially Alaska communities where the blood test can't be shipped back in time to be tested. And so they still use the skin test, which is a good test for those individuals. But we just really, really believe that the IGRA test is the way to go, a simple blood test. And it's a much more definitive test in my mind.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to take our last quick break here. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question, a comment for our guest today, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on tuberculosis with Dr. Bruce Chandler and Nurse Lee Boone.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant applications are now being accepted for tribal justice grants through the U.S. Department of Justice. Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CETAS grants, fund tribal courts and tribal law enforcement, open to federally recognized tribes across Alaska. Applications are open until March 21st. Learn more at atjrc.org/CTAS. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tribal Justice Resource Center.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by public health nurse Lee Boone of the Anchorage Health Department and Dr. Bruce Chandler with the Alaska Department of Health, and we're discussing the high rates of tuberculosis in Alaska. If you have a question, toll free, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. Or email me, line1@alaskapublic.org. We just have about 10, 12 minutes left, so I want to try to get as many callers as we can. John is calling from Anchorage. John, welcome to Line 1.
Hello.
Hi, John.
I wanted to, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Great. Okay. I just wanted to comment that the pandemic resulted in a tremendous increase in TB worldwide, and in our Congress, where they're now looking at a bill called End the TB Act, which is going to be basically used to support the Global Fund. One of the supporting groups in Anchorage is the Results Group, and the Results Group deals with this issue of TB locally. And I would say that most importantly is all of our federal congressional people have been supportive of this. And in fact, probably the strongest supporter of all was actually Don Young, who basically pushed to have work done here in Alaska. So there is a lot of support for trying to end TB, and the effort is going to require quite a bit of money. So the number of people worldwide that have been exposed to this is quite large, and in fact increased over the pandemic period. So I just wanted to let people know that, in fact, our Congress is concerned about that, and if they wanted to support that particular funding issue, it's called the Global Fund. That is a global worldwide program to deal with these major diseases. So I thought you might want to know that too. Thank you.
Thank you, absolutely, John, for your comments there. I know we will be talking here in a moment about World TB Day coming up. Bruce, did you want to say something there?
I just would like to recognize the heroic efforts of the Result volunteers that they've been working steadfastly for decades to trying to advance global TB programs and controls. I appreciate all their efforts.
Absolutely. And let's take another call. Kristen from Anchor Point.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Kristen. Yeah. What can we answer for you?
Okay. I was wondering, the vaccine, is it just not being given out anymore? Or is it just after a period of time doesn't become, is not efficacious anymore? I mean, I'm an older person, retired. And I was given the vaccine, and, you know, should I be worried that it's no longer functioning in my body because I'm an older person? Or, I mean, I'm a little confused, or just not being given out to people anymore, children anymore. People are opting out of the vaccine program and leaving their children to fate. You know, you either catch or you don't. It can be either cured, or it's if it's one of these very resistant ones, maybe not, because there's supposed to be a resistant one that's very difficult to handle, very difficult to cure.
Absolutely.
So, wondering what's going on.
Thank you, Kristen. So, Lee, I'll have you take this one. You can punt it to Bruce if you want. But it seems like, okay, there is a vaccine available. It is used globally a lot. We have super high rates in Alaska. So why don't we have the vaccine in the U.S.?
Well, I may punt to Bruce in just a minute, but it's my understanding that in those areas where they have in those countries, and especially in foreign-born individuals, where they have very, very high rates and burden of disease, it is very useful. In this country, we don't have a really good vaccine. And what I find is when people walk through the door and they tell me that they've had the BCG and they think that they're protected, that might not be the case. And so, like Bruce was referring to, it kind of wearing off and doesn't completely cover. So we don't offer it in the United States, is my understanding. Except, Bruce, you know, maybe you could speak to that. I do know there's been quite a bit of effort worldwide to come up with a vaccine that can prevent tuberculosis. It's a bacteria that's been around a long time. It's done a lot of changing. And so it is very difficult to complete treatment with this. So we love the fact that we have this new test and that testing is available and preventative treatment is there as well. So, Bruce?
No, I agree with what Lee says. Most, if not all, of the foreign-born people we see with active TB disease have a history of BCG vaccination in their home country a long time before they've developed their disease. While it seems to be reduces risk of the very serious disease in infants and young children. It doesn't have ongoing long-term protection against TB in adults. And as Lee said, there's tremendous research going on. We all look forward to a day when we have an effective vaccine that can be widely used to prevent people from becoming infected and to prevent people with infection from developing disease. But they keep getting closer, but we're not there yet.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Kristen, for your question. And next, we're going to go to Frank calling from Wasilla. Welcome to Line 1.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Frank. What question can we answer for you? Yep. I can hear you. It's fine.
Teacher in Anchorage in the early days, and of course came up with a time test that was positive, and down the line had chest x-rays. And then I've all through the years, every once in a while where I had that time test, it pops up, and I'm always wondering why that might happen.
Okay, all right.
On the skin, that same spot.
Same spot where you had testing done. Okay, thanks, Frank. Bruce, any ideas why Frank may have reactions there occasionally?
I haven't heard that previously yet. I don't know if there could be residual proteins from the time test that may have periodically stimulate an immune response, but I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah. Would he be a candidate for potentially getting the blood test? Would that be a good idea?
Well, as Lee said, I'm very biased towards doing the blood test because it gives us a much clearer answer and don't have to come back to have it read. And we see people who've had positive time tests in the past that we'd really like to know if the reaction was from TB or was it possibly some other component of what was on the tuberculin tines that put it in our skin.
Yeah, excellent. So, Lee, if Frank wanted to go get a blood test, how would he do that?
Right. Well, this is good news because of March 24th being something that we celebrate every year. The Anchorage Health Department is having a no-cost testing Friday the 24th. We're closing all clinics and concentrating on tuberculosis. And so you could come in on that day and get the free, no cost test. But typically, if somebody is concerned about whether they have the infection and whether they need treatment, and if they're symptomatic or asymptomatic, they can come on in to the Anchorage Health Department. We see individuals by appointment unless they're symptomatic. And if you're symptomatic and a doctor refers you down to the health department, you're going to see Nurse Lee or one of our other TB nurses that day. If you're not having symptoms and just want to find out, do I have the infection? Do I have the bacteria sleeping in my body? And should I be concerned? And am I a candidate for preventative treatment? Then a simple call to the health department, make an appointment, come on in, and you'll see one of five very, very well-educated, BSN-prepared nurses at the health department. And it's a simple test, and we'll walk you through every step of what the results mean. So, yes, he could come on down to the health department for that test.
Excellent. So we just have the last few minutes here. I want to give a plug for World Tuberculosis Day, which is March 24th. The Anchorage Assemblies passed a resolution declaring that the same day as Tuberculosis Day in Anchorage. And I understand there's a few events that are happening for that. If we could comment on that for our listeners, that would be wonderful. Lee, I'll start with you.
Right. So we really do applaud the Assembly for recognizing World TB Day. And the reason that we're here today is to inform folks in the community, in our community here throughout the state and especially in the municipality, that the Anchorage Health Department deals with this daily. And on that day, on March 24th, just like any other day, we will be seeing people and treating people for TB preventatively and for TB disease, but we also will be having, I'm not sure if it's catered pizza or what we're going to have, but we're offering food. We're saying, come on in. If you just come for information and education, we've got a lot of well-informed staff members that can help you answer any kind of question further. We're offering that blood test at no cost. We also, on that Friday, I believe they're going to have STIs, which is sexually transmitted in, diseases. We're going to have that department, which is typically open, available, so you can come in for a no-cost test for that as well. It's also just opening our doors and saying we're here in the community. We would like people to know what we're doing. And so we're located at 825 L Street, the corner of 9th and L. You'll see the big Municipality of Anchorage sign. Come on down, and we would love to it's something we're passionate about, and you can't stop us from talking about tuberculosis. But come down, meet the staff there, and find out what your health department is doing in Anchorage.
Yeah, thank you, Lee. And then, Bruce, we're going to have some closing thoughts from you. I just wanted to throw a plug out there. I got a very nice email from Dr. Paul Davis. I unfortunately can't get to much of the specifics about the mycobacteriums, but he did make a pitch for a good book. If people want to follow up on reading about tuberculosis, Robert Fortuyn's book, Chills and Fevers, which is a history of disease and healthcare in Alaska. So for those interested in the topic, might want to consider that on your reading list. Bruce, to you, any closing thoughts?
One other book by Dr. Fortuyn, Must We All Die, is specifically about Alaska's 2 centuries of tuberculosis. Another fascinating book. We talk about TB. We don't have very real high caseloads, but it's important to remember around the world, over 1.5 million people are dying each year of tuberculosis. And I just would like to recognize the boatload of healthcare workers and public health people, both throughout the state, that are working day in and day out. Under radar, trying to help people cure their disease and trying to help people prevent getting TB disease in the future. So I thank them for all their efforts. They go unrecognized, but they do a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah, this really is a public health movement here. And you're right, Dr. Chandler, the numbers overall are still low. But the rate is certainly, considering the population, is quite high here. So,
and I will say that it's a fascinating disease, and we need all the help we can get. So it's not going to go away in my lifetime. So I'm hoping there will be many more healthcare people to help people cure their disease coming along. So the more we can educate people, the better.
No, absolutely. And sadly, that's all the time we're going to have for today. I'm really happy we got through a lot of these topics. World TB Day coming up on the 24th. We have excellent health teams here in Anchorage who can also reach out to the rural communities. A special thanks to our guests for being with us today. Thank you to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.